Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, now twice on RadioMD.com, every Saturday 3 to 5 and 5 to 7. Each week, we discuss the stories that will matter most to you and your family so that you can take control and live at the top of your curve. Plus, we have guests at 3:30 and 5:30, the top environmental reports that affect your health with What's Toxic, What's Not with Gary Ginsberg, and the top medical news of the week. Sleep Smarter is our guest, Sean Stevenson, at the bottom of this hour. Sean has written the book Sleep Smarter, 21 Essential Strategies to Sleep Your Way to a Better Body, Better Health, and Bigger Success. He talks about the importance of 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. We're going to challenge him on that. And why topical magnesium may be an ideal component. And whether there's a specific omega-3 that really helps you sleep. We've got great stories. And Gary Ginsberg in the second hour. By the way, we're on 2 hours. You can always get us at RadioMD.com if you're out of your local station's radio listening area. And, of course, you can get the iPod, or the iPod, if you will, podcast anytime at RadioMD.com or at iHeartRadio. Turns out there's a number of great stories this week. You heard some of them being the lead-in. Does 1 minute of exercise really equal 45 minutes? What's the data on that? And, of course, the data on the change in longevity in the United States. I think I'll go into that first. So Americans are living life longer. That is, since 1970, in the 40 years from 1970 to 2010, our life expectancy at birth expanded by about 9 years. Which means if you're born today and you're a guy, you will live, or a male baby, you'll live about 79 years, female baby about 83 and a half. That's up from 70 and 74, respectively, in about 1970. But half of those years will be disabled years, according to the data. That is, we're living longer but more disabled, and there's more income inequality in how long you live, probably not related to your income, but related to your health choices. That is, those in the upper brackets seem to choose healthier choices, not only in food and managing stress. Those are probably part of, if you will, the economics of it, but exercise and avoiding toxins, and those aren't the economics, those are your choices. Turns out people who are in the poorest group in San Francisco live much longer than those, for example, in the poorest groups of downtrodden cities such as Atlanta or Detroit or Cleveland, and those extra years that the poor live there are due to their choices. Less, believe it or not, less smoking in California, more in Atlanta and Detroit. Now, so the next part of this also is we're getting much more diabetes. We've gone from a 1% type 2 diabetes rate in 1970 to an 11.3% rate now, due to largely our food choices and our physical activity habits. And maybe some of that is occasioned by our amount of stress. 13 years, in the last 13 years, we've extended the life expectancy by 2.4 years for men and 2.8 years for women. So just from 2000 to 2014, we continue to expand this, and it looks like we will really expand it continually and even more, as a lot of money is now being spent on aging research, and it looks like you will be able to live longer. One of those studies on aging research this week the 1 minute of all-out exercise. Now, this is a misnomer. It really isn't 1 minute of exercise. Specifically, the volunteers warmed up for 2 minutes on a stationary bicycle, then pedaled as hard as they could for 20 seconds, rode at a slower pace for the next 2 minutes, then sprinted all out for 20 seconds, rode at a slower pace for 2 minutes, and then pedaled all out for 20 seconds. So it's 3 20-second periods separated by 2 minutes with a 2-minute warm-up and a 3-minute cool-down, total of 10 minutes. They did that 3 times a week, so it's 10 minutes. Anyone can do 10 minutes, right? 10 minutes, 3 times a week for 12 weeks, and they had the same physiologic changes in uptake of glucose into their muscle cells and changes in their cholesterol levels as people who did 45 minutes a day, 3 days a week, at moderate pace for the same 12-week period. And both were substantially improved, both in measures that correlate, metabolic measures that we correlate with longevity, as well as in their, if you will, weight and waste. So doing something better than nothing, doing it slow better than not doing it at all, doing it fast, that is intensely for 20 seconds, 3 times in a 10-minute period that's broken by 2 minutes of rest and 2-minute warm-up, 3-minute cool-down, appears to get you the same benefits. Is this as good as what we said, the 4 exercises? That is the 4 of 10,000 steps a day plus 30 minutes of weightlifting 3 times a week plus cardio for 20 minutes 3 times a week plus jumping 40 times? Well, we don't know. What we do know is from long-term studies, you live longer and with less disability by doing the 4 components of physical activity. This one seemed to correct the metabolic abnormality and seemed to give you as much benefit in stamina and in ability to exercise as did the longer 45 minutes slower rate. This was all in 25 out of shape young people. We don't know how long they will live. We don't know anything. We don't have the longevity studies that the Cleveland Clinic studies, the Cooper Clinic studies, the Harvard alumni, and the Penn alumni studies have all shown. Those other 4 components of physical activity are the minimum you need to do for maximum health. So is this 1 minute thing okay? We don't know. But if you want to get it, it's clearly better than nothing. It's clearly a quick, intense exercise. And can you do it every morning or every evening? Yeah. Doing 20 seconds of all-out activity 3 times in a 10-minute period, broken by 2 minutes of rest, everyone should be able to do that. So that is one of the top news stories of the week, and maybe it will get you as much longevity as the others. When we come back, we've got some other stories about the 3 to 5 decade study that showed a change in your longevity if you were a heavy marijuana user in your teen years, specifically between ages 18 and 20. And we'll come back and tell you what we mean by heavy marijuana use and why it shortens your life by 10 years if this study is correct. Spanking, what happens to kids who are spanked? Are they just kids who have bad behaviors to begin with, or are they likely to adopt bad behaviors to it? Childhood obesity continues to increase. Booze, bacon, and obesity increase your risk of stomach cancer. How much is it worth worrying about? On the other hand, protein in the morning at breakfast prevents cravings later. We'll get to that story as well. And swipe right to connect young people to HIV testing. The FDA urges caution on yeast infections for fluconazole, the common drug. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Michael Roizen, MD.
RadioMD.com.
Here's Dr. Mike.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on RadioMD, passionate show that helps you take control of your genes so you can live at the top of your curve all your life. And what do we have? Gary Ginsberg coming up on What's Toxic segment. He's going to talk about baby exposure to arsenic, triples of eating rice cereal, the dangers of coal tar sealants on your home, and of course, he's also going to talk about the latest data on, if you will, sunscreen and what it does to you that isn't as good as we wish it would, and what sunscreen is great for you. So we've got all of that coming up. Also, fast food eating, yeah, it triples the plasticizers in your blood. So those stories coming up on Gary Ginsberg, What's Toxic, at 17 after the second hour, at 30 after this hour, in this hour, coming up in just 10 minutes. Sean Stevenson, author of Sleep Smarter, 21 Essential Strategies to Sleep Your Way to a Better Body, Better Health, and Bigger Success, from Rodale Books. Sean is the best-selling author and founder of The Modern Health Show, which has been featured as a number one podcast on iTunes with millions of listener downloads every year. And we're going to talk to him about the 21 secrets to sleep your way to a better body. Why 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. is so key, and what it means for you to get transdermal magnesium versus just magnesium tablets. We'll get to all those subjects. Your questions, too. You can always ask our audience questions at udocs, y-o-u-d-o-c-s, at gmail.com, y-o-u-d-o-c-s, at gmail.com. That's up and running. And Don Toledo had a great article. I hope I can mention your name, Don. Don Toledo has a great article that is on Denmark. Their ethics council, formal part of government, calls for a tax on red meat to fight the ethical problem of climate change. Just Google that if you want to see it. Why is it so important and why is it coming up? Well, we've got four things in health that are really disabling us that mean that we won't live, that the current generation, that is the millennials and the generation that is right behind the baby boomers, may not live as long as they are if you depend on health habits. That is, although we're expanding lifespan as we talked about in the first segment, there is white women are now shortening their lifespan in the last 5 years. That's the only group that isn't expanding it. All the other women are, by the way, but white women aren't, and they went down a tenth of a year in the last 5 years as opposed to everyone else going up 2 or 3 years. And why is that? Because they're getting much more of the chronic disease tied to our lifestyle choices. So Don, and one of those major lifestyle choices is red meat and processed meat and egg yolks, all of which cause inflammation in your body. And so the Denmark Ethics Council has called for a tax on red meat, but not because of this, but because animals cause so much of the, if you will, the change in our atmosphere, the change in the ozone level, and the change in the carbon level in the atmosphere, which is causing thought to be causing the global warming. I'm not a real scientist in the global warming area. I don't know it well enough, but it looks to me like the global warming science is solid, and that we are warming as a planet. Whether it's caused by these choices or others, I'm not sure. But in any case, we've got to slow it down, and the Denmark Ethics Council has called for a tax on red meat. But it is also healthy to tax it. You know, Mayor Bloomberg's the only one. The only thing we've really succeeded with in the habits where reptilian joys don't overwhelm the cognitive choices we make. That is, many people would say we should be doing more physical activity, limiting portion sizes, avoiding the red meat, getting rid of cigarettes, managing stress. If you do just those, you're well on your way to having less than 10% chance of a chronic disease compared to others in our society at the same age. Well, it turns out that the only thing that's really worked is regulation and financial incentives, disincentives, such as taxes. And the higher cigarette taxes go, the fewer people are smoking. In fact, if you ban smoking to age 21, you decrease the premature births in the women who smoke before age 21 and get pregnant by about 40%. So banning the cigarettes, not allowing those to be purchased by anyone under 21, and also hookah and marijuana under 21, banning those decreases premature births and increases the viability of our kids. We'll come back to that story on premature births and viability, because there's a large study out by the FDA saying one of the common treatments for yeast infection, fluconazole or difluconazole, may be associated with an increased miscarriage rate. And so they're warning women who are pregnant not to use it. Pregnancy, by the way, this is really getting troubling. Zika, 570 cases in Puerto Rico, and probably many, many more than that, about 50 involving pregnant women. What do you do if you're pregnant and you have Zika? Well, it turns out we have another case of this in Canada, not of Zika, but related to isotretinoin. Isotretinoin is the acne treatment that is associated with birth defects. And what did the Canadian women and the Texas women who have studied, who get pregnant when they've been taking this isotretinoin, and they should, in fact, use birth control, avoid pregnancy, if you will, while taking this medicine, but they aren't doing it. Instead, what they're doing is 90% of them, this is amazing, 90% who get pregnant while on this drug in the Canadian study and in the Texas study opt for abortions on themselves, if you will, or aborting the fetus. And so I'm a little worried about Zika. Zika will come to at least the bottom 25 or 30 states in the United States. Those states clearly below the Mason-Dixon line have a risk of this infection, and maybe many of us. So the message is, we've got to learn how to get more money into the prevention of the mosquito outbreaks and get more money into treatment. Coming up in 2 minutes, Sean Stevenson, the best-selling author and founder of The Modern Health Show, a featured number one health podcast. He's going to talk about sleeping smarter. He's written this really neat book, Sleep Smarter. It includes a 14-day plan, but it's the 21 essential strategies to sleep your way to a better body, better health, and bigger success. Sean Stevenson, Stevenson. The book is on Amazon. We'll talk to him in a few minutes. In addition, we're going to get to, in the second hour, if we don't get to it in the first hour, we get to it in the second hour, the stories about spanking and what happens after 5 years follow-up, marijuana, what happens if you are a heavy user between ages 18 and 20, and adult postmenopausal women with type 2 diabetes double their risk of cancer. Can you prevent it? And the answer is yes, and we'll tell you how. There's a drug that helps you do that. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. We're going to hope you will stay well and stay tuned for Sean Stevenson, Sleep Smarter, 21 Essential Strategies to Sleep Your Way to Better Health. We'll be right back.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. We're having trouble connecting with our guest, Sean Stevenson. But when he does call in, we're going to talk to him. Some of the things he goes over in the book, it's not about getting 8 hours. It's about getting to bed at the right time. And he says, it's been shown that human beings get the most beneficial hormone secretions and recovery by sleeping during the hours of 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. You get the most rejuvenating effects during this period, and any sleep that you get in addition is a nice bonus. Some people get 8 or more hours of sleep but still don't feel rested when they wake up because their bodies have been deprived of getting the sleep between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. Do you believe that? Well, I don't know if I do, but we'll challenge Sean when he comes on, because the book is Sleep Smarter, 21 Essential Strategies to Sleep Your Way to a Better Body, Better Health, and Bigger Success. And he's done a lot of research in this area to get it good. And so, Sean, I understand you're on the line.
Yes, I am. How you doing?
Good. How are you? So
doing
we've
fantastic.
Given your introduction. We've talked a little bit about some of the things in your book. And one of the things that you say is the key points are 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Why is that?
Great question. And I say that, you know, timing your sleep is like timing an investment. And it doesn't matter how much you invest. It really matters when you invest. It makes all the difference in the world. And this is based on evolutionary biology, the fact that throughout our evolution, and we're looking at possibly 2 million years in this particular form, we've been going to sleep shortly after the sun goes down. And we have a very specific day and night light cycle, which has been radically broken today. And so if we get some sleep within that window, we're going to get an added benefit of a greater secretion of human growth hormone, greater secretions of melatonin, and also the reparative enzymes that really help to regenerate your tissues. All of that stuff is working at its peak during those hours because, evolutionarily speaking, that's when you would be getting to sleep, and that's when your body goes full force on helping to repair you.
Now, what happens if you do a job that has a mandatory that you're up then, you're a nurse, let's just say, and you have the, if you will, 11 p.m., you have a shift worker, and you have the 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift. How do you make up for that?
Yes, and I can definitely identify with this. I worked a late shift myself when I was in college. And working in college, working at a university, I had the opportunity to work with a lot of nurses over the years and also a lot of pre-med students. And so I can definitely identify and understand this struggle. However, the research shows just right off the bat, the World Health Organization has come out and said that shift work is actually a class 2A carcinogen. So that means that working the overnight shift is equivalent to UVA radiation and lead as far as being a carcinogen, a cancer-causing agent, which just doesn't even make any sense until you understand the fact that melatonin is quite possibly our most powerful endogenously produced anti-cancer hormone. And this is why melatonin isn't just about sleep. It's also about protecting our DNA. It's about protecting what our cells are doing. So it's really, really important to understand that. And if you're doing the shift work, then automatically melatonin is really responsive to light. And you need darkness. You need a very specific dark cycle for melatonin to be produced at its normal levels. And so if you're up, especially working in a hospital setting, the fluorescent lights, your melatonin is suppressed, period. And plus your cortisol levels are going to be elevated because those are more of the, quote, daytime hormones. And if you're off your normal sleep cycle, your cortisol is going to be high. And that's going to lead to things like unwanted body fat, obviously disrupted sleep quality, insulin resistance, and the list goes on and on. And you see this, and I know you have as well, with our physicians, with our nurses, especially those that are working a lot of stressful hours, their health is a big concern as well. And so I think that, you know, the way the system is built, and I know that you've gone through it, it's not really conducive to taking care of the health practitioner themselves. And I think it's really needing a makeover, because I don't like the way that our practitioners are not really being taken care of, even though they're taken care of by us.
Well, can you do this by changing? One of the things you talk about is, and I don't want to give away all the book, but one of the things you talk about is changing the sleep, the light cycles, and changing circadian rhythms by having artificial blue and red light. What could you do that, or does that help it, or do we not have data on that? Because this is, I should tell the listeners, this is a incredibly well-researched book. So you've done a great job at annotating it and demonstrating the research on it. So is there any data on that?
So what I tell people, especially when it comes to the topic of shift work, and we've got to understand too, this is a smaller percentage of our population, but it's a very important percentage. You know, so it's not just the health practitioners, but public safety, you know, firefighters, police officers. And what it's looking like, even if you're doing this just a couple nights a week, it's going to be pretty equivalent to if you're doing it pretty much every day. So what I'm advocating is that instead of being based on seniority, we get onto, your body is very forgiving and can recover sleep debt if it has a long amount of time to recover. So I'm advocating maybe a 10-month period of being on normal work hours and then a 2-month period of doing overnight work, because the research shows that, you know what, it doesn't really matter too much what you do, because it's still gonna throw you off, because you're trying to fake out nature. Now, that brings to the point of, you can do your absolute best to fake out nature. And that's what I'm going to advocate for when you are working overnight shift. And so what does that look like? Basically, you have to do everything right. When you're getting sleep, when you're doing the daytime, when everybody else is kind of working and that's your time to sleep, you need to get your room blacked out. You need to get some blackout curtains and make sure that your room is as dark as possible, literally to the point that in the midday, like at noon, you still can't see your hand in front of your face in your bedroom. That's going to help increase your melatonin. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sean, now you also talk about an orgasm being helpful to go to sleep.
Right.
And that relates to this because it is hormonal change. Is that right?
That is very correct. And so that's kind of good news for a lot of people. And it's one of those things that essentially it's nature's ambient, you know. And so we have these really powerful, like a chemical of cocktails. I'm sorry, a cocktail of chemicals that our body produces when we're sleeping, namely like oxytocin, for example. And in the Journal of Regulatory Peptides, they found that oxytocin has a calming effect on the body that basically buffers the effects of cortisol and promotes good sleep. So it's right there in the research. We also produce serotonin through orgasm, norepinephrine, which helps to regulate your REM sleep, vasopressin, prolactin. It goes on and on. And we know this in popular culture that's kind of attributed to sex, and this is why I even say it's called sleeping together. But this is another call to have a good, healthy sexual relationship. And in addition to the other stuff that we talk about in health, which is the nutrition and the sleep and the exercise. But we cannot overlook the fact of, you know, again, our genes expect us to have a healthy sex life as well. And that's one of those things that can definitely help you sleep better.
When we come back, when we're going to have to take a break soon, but when we come back, Sean, I'm going to talk about some supplements and what you say, excuse me, on the specific supplements one can use to help you sleep better or help you get prepared for it, as well as what you should do in general about getting prepared for sleep. So you talked a little bit today already about making sure you've got blackout curtains and stuff to get the day out of the night and the night out of the day. But we're going to talk specifically, what I'd like to do is talk about some of the specifics in supplements and what you advise people to do. So there are athletes who must have to go to sleep before the big game. What do you tell them to do? How do they get to sleep before the big game? We'll be right back with Sean Stevenson, Sleep Smarter, 21 Essential Strategies to Sleep Your Way to a Better Body, Better Health, and Bigger Success. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Stay well.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Michael Roizen, MD.
RadioMD.com.
Here's Dr. Mike.
And this is Radio MD and Dr. Mike. We have already got a set of questions coming in from listeners. You can always send us questions at udocs@gmail.com, udocs@gmail.com. Muriel asks, what about in a dark room? One would fall down if one didn't have lights. How does one handle that? Sean, are you there?
Yes, yes. That's a fantastic question. And this really rolls back down to anything with reality and with nature and understanding that we are okay. And we should definitely be able to navigate our bedroom. And you don't want to have your bedroom be a haphazard place of obstacles either, you know. A room, you know, someplace that's pretty free and clear of obstruction, and we have the right kind of environment in there, the right impact lighting.
So one of the things, I'm having a little trouble hearing you, Sean, and I hope Ben can fix that if it isn't coming over the airways good as well. But is that you should be able to negotiate your bedroom well, is what he said. And the other thing I do want to just bring out from that standpoint is that one of the things is having red lights. Your brain doesn't see red wavelength light. So you can use a nightlight in your bathroom, which is red wavelength only. They sell them now. Or, in fact, have lights on the floor, you know, the floor lighting that is red lights with just one of those really inexpensive nightlights that is angled at the floor. Sean, I don't know if you're on a cell or not, and Ben, I don't know if you can hear him, so Ben, if you can tell me. But another question came in from Michelle. How do you deal with snoring? Suppose the husband snores. How does the wife handle this? Is there a sound machine, or what do you do, or is there a supplement you can do to either give him or yourself so it doesn't bother you? Oh, I'm losing. Sean, are you there?
Hello.
Okay, he's back.
Sean, can you hear us?
I can.
Good. Okay. I don't know if you heard the question. This is a question from Michelle on the email line. What do you do if your husband snores? Is there something you can give him to stop him from making as much noise? Or is there something you can do? Or is it just you've got to go to different rooms?
Yeah. Ooh, this is something to definitely talk about here, and something I could definitely identify with. Right now, I don't know if people realize this, but about one in every four couples don't even sleep in the same bedroom today because of these type of issues. And I can identify with it greatly because even in my young years, and my wife's young years, we've been together now for 12 years, she's a petite woman, but she can snore like a bear, right? Like a wild brown grizzly bear. And what we found the solution over the years is that, number one, is her sleeping position. Snoring, it doesn't matter how big or small you are. Anyone can snore, but one of the catalysts there, of course, is having a little bit more weight on your frame, and that's obstructing your breathing pathway. And so simply laying on your side is going to help tremendously. And if the person has a habit of sleeping on their back, especially, and or another direction, you know, kind of on their belly, you can do the old tennis ball trick if they're laying on their back, which is sewing a pocket into the back of their shirt and putting a tennis ball in there. So if they try to turn over, it will just gently nudge them to get back on their side. A quick fix. Another thing is making sure that they're not eating too late. That can cause or contribute to some snoring. Making sure that they're optimally hydrated, not necessarily right before bed, but through the day. Because even, and I heard one of the commercials actually talking about the importance of hydration and making sure that all of those channels are flowing correctly. So that's really, really important as well. It's just the basics there with the snoring. Of course, there are some medical issues that can be a cause, but generally this can be a solution of, number one, first and foremost, work on changing the sleep position. That can help a lot.
And although I risk not getting Jim Graham, who called in, by the way, people can call in 844-305-7800, talk to Ben and he'll get you on the air. But before we go to Jim Graham with his question, magnesium, why transdermal? Is it better than oral magnesium? We lost him. I'm sorry, Sean. So, Sean Stevenson, I should tell you, there are a lot of incredibly good tips. It's too bad we lost him because there are a lot of incredibly good tips in this book by Sean Stevenson. And it is Sleep Smarter, 21 Essential Strategies to Sleep Your Way to a Better Body, Better Health, and Bigger Success. That is one of the tricks that he talked about, was putting that tennis ball, sewing it into your sleep clothes so that you can't sleep on your back, so that that kind of pushes you. It gets it so that you're uncomfortable enough on your back with that tennis ball that you go to the side, and that's a great trick. Jim Graham, do you have a question for Sean?
Yes, I did, and thank you for taking my call. I have a statement and a question also. I spent about 5 to 6 years in a region where we had about 3 months of total darkness, and I found it a lot easier to sleep in that climate than it was when we had three months of total light. We used to go out at midnight to get lunch, and the sun was overhead. And I found it, even though the room was dark because I had a shade over my window, I had trouble sleeping in that environment. And the second part of my question is, what do you do about that? And what the second part of my question is, what do you do about old goats like me that have that male problem and you're up about 3 to 4 times a night relieving yourself and it's tough to get a good night's sleep?
Sean, I don't know if you can hear that.
Yep, I got it. Okay, so the first thing is referring to the being in a region where you're having those very long periods of light and very long periods of dark. And, you know, again, if we look at evolutionary biology, the vast majority of humans were not in those conditions, you know, and kind of humans have migrated and moved themselves because, we're survivors. You know, we can really adapt to a lot, but that's not the ideal place you want to live in. And you just explained it really right there in black and white that you were having difficulty sleeping, dealing with those kind of extreme conditions. So my recommendation number one is generally if you want to make sure that you're getting optimal sleep and your health is the number one priority, you're not going to be in one of those areas. And I'm sorry to say that. But within that context, we got to make sure that we're, again, just focusing on sleeping smarter and using those strategies to try our best to get, and the doctor mentioned earlier about light therapy. So during those times of complete darkness, you have to do light therapy. So this could be UV therapy through your ears, with visors, with a light box. And then during those months of daytime, we've got to make sure we're blacking out our bedroom at night, because even a small bit of light can disrupt your sleep.
Now, Sean, we're going to have to break as we break for the halftime of the show. The book is a wonderful book. Sean Stevenson, Sleep Smarter, 21 Essential Strategies to Sleep Your Way to a Better Body, Better Health, and Bigger Success, including a 14-day plan, Sleep Smarter.